Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of On3 Sports. Now get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk here with you on a Thursday morning. Thanks for joining us at supertalk.fm. For wherever it is you get podcasts from, we appreciate all you guys out there, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. I hope that you have downloaded and listened to all 578 new podcasts that were downloaded yesterday. According to Apple Podcasts, we demand that you listen to each and every one of them. There's no reason not to.
It's been popping up every 5 minutes. It says you have 400 new episodes of.
You better be listening to them. There's a lot of great information in there. I mean, Joel is on some of those, for God's sake. So
yes,
we want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffee House and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way with a trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffee House here in Starkville, or at Brupolo over in Tupelo. It'd be a little weird, Robbie, if Brupolo was in Fruitland Park.
Oh, that would be a little weird. But there is the blueberry cobbler coffee.
Yeah. I mean,
that might be a product of Fruitland Park.
Could be. Plus, you know, they have, you know, blueberry scones and muffins, and, you know, I think they have some banana stuff, some banana nut bread every now and then. I don't know. Oof. I don't know what's going on out there in Fruitland Park. So
I love banana nut bread. I just finished off some banana nut bread that I had waiting for me when I got back from my trip to Virginia. Mm-hmm. That is one of my favorite dessert / breakfast items, because I count that as breakfast.
Okay. Would you like a 3-ingredient banana bread recipe? So easy, anyone can do it.
Sure.
All right. You need 3 bananas, 2 eggs, and a box of yellow cake mix. Make it a good one. Don't go cheap. Mix the bananas and the eggs. Mash them all together, and then you add in the cake mix, so it's fully combined. And then you bake for 45 to 50, and it's done.
Where's the nuts?
Oh, this is just banana bread. Now, if you want banana nut bread, just add nuts.
I can deal with just the banana too.
But if you want nut, then it's a 4-ingredient recipe at that point.
Yeah, it's true.
So it's still easy. It's still low ingredients. Just there's another one.
You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
Never rub another man's rhubarb. Wherever you are in our great state, you can enjoy Strange Brew Coffee each and every morning. It's just a click away, strangebrewcoffeehouse.com. Order it to be delivered right to your door, and you can start your day the same way we do here in Starkville with Strange Brew Coffee House. Pip Printing and Signs. Pip Printing and Signs has reliable service for every business need. Long story short, what that means is when they help you, your business improves. It's science. So you give them a call, they take over your printing, and you're talking about top-notch, high-quality, top-of-the-line graphics, mailers, coupons, promotional items, brochures, postcards. Hey, if you want it, like Super Talk, we have the wrapped car out there. The Super Talk wrapped, you can wrap your car, promote your business that way. Just an idea. So whatever it is you're looking for, Pip Printing and Signs can help you. And most importantly, if you're an MSU fan, your business with Pip Printing and Signs gets money to the Bulldog Initiative. 10% of your sale with Pip Printing and Signs goes to the Bulldog Initiative in your name. You're now a Bulldog Initiative business, just like that. Call Cam Baker at 601-499-5216. Tell him you heard about it on Thunder and Lightning. He will take care of the rest. When you need printing, call Pip today. College Corner, collegecornerstore.com is the place to find the maroon and white merchandise that you're looking for, and you are looking for. We are going to replace these banner M polos come hell or high water. We're going to do it, and you're going to help us do it with a trip to College Corner. 2 locations to serve you in the Jackson area, Ridgeland by Fleet Feet, Flowed by the Half Shell, or you can shop online, collegecornerstore.com. Restaurant Tyler is Starkville's flagship restaurant for lunch, for dinner, for Sunday brunch. The best meal in town is at Restaurant Tyler. Had a one of my cousins text me today. He's like, hey, I'm bringing my kid up for orientation. Where should we go? I was like, for dinner, Restaurant Tyler. That's exactly where you should go. So,
agree.
I mean, it's just easy money. If you're going to have a great meal and you want to do that here in Starkville, the place to do it is Restaurant Tyler. Priority One Bank, 16 locations to serve you throughout Central Mississippi. Let PriorityOneBank.com be your guide, show you the location nearest you, and to show you all of the great services offered at Priority One Bank. They're going to help grow your money. They're going to work for your money. You don't have to work anymore at that point. You've done the hard work. Get the money to Priority One Bank. Let them take it from there. Let them show you how to increase your wealth with Priority One Bank. Again, the website, PriorityOneBank.com. Let Priority One Bank make you their priority. If this is a show, if you are, I give this disclaimer every now and then. If you're not a big fan of Robbie Falk, well, I've got a great show for lined up for you here today, because we've already got two interviews in the can that Robbie's not a part of, but we will get his thoughts on this first thing, because we are 12 weeks away from the start of the college football season, which means we are finally here to do our first opponent preview. And as you know, we start with the Egg Bowl. Let's do the interview first. Richard Cross, SEC Network, Sports Talk Mississippi, ESPN, known scalawag. He joined me earlier today to preview the Ole Miss Rebels. If you're a longtime listener to this podcast, you know this is how we do opponent previews. 12 weeks out from the start of the season, one at a time, and we start at the end, which means we get to talk about the Egg Bowl in the middle of June. Richard Cross joins me, Sports Talk Mississippi, ESPN, the Ole Miss Radio Network at times, maybe a few other odd jobs, right? Anything that gets him out of a Friday on Sports Talk Mississippi, Richard Cross will do that for money. Richard, hey, man, how you doing? Good to talk to you.
I'm great. I don't mean to question your strategy on this, but would you not be better suited to start at the beginning of the season and then build momentum toward the end of the year?
My thought process is you start at the end, and then when you get to week one, you're previewing the team that you're playing that week.
Well, how beautiful is it that we're only 12 weeks away from the start of the season?
It's a glorious thing. Glorious. Absolutely fantastic. And a college football season, Richard, that I'm more excited for than ever before.
You know, I certainly am. I'm glad to hear that you've kind of gotten on board.
I know you are. We're about to talk about why.
And look, I mean, there are two reasons. Obviously, the fact that, you know, Ole Miss is in so many offseason conversations and the expectations are so high. That's certainly one of them. But honestly, more than that, this, you know, expansion to 12 teams, feeling like you've got more teams that legitimately have a chance to play for a national title, to be in the conversation at the end of the year. I never understood the arguments that people might, oh, this is going to devalue games in the regular season. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Now, it might devalue an SEC championship game. It might devalue Alabama, Auburn. Maybe it devalues Ohio State, Michigan. But I will take devaluing a handful of games to create more value for what, 30, 40, 50, 60 games over the last month of the regular season, because the meaning for games that otherwise wouldn't have mattered, you know, outside of individual fan bases, man, this is stuff that's going to matter nationally as we're going down the stretch when, you know, who is it? When Notre Dame plays, I don't know.
USC?
Pick a team. Say what?
USC.
Yeah, USC. Yeah, Notre Dame plays USC. Let's say USC is not in the mix, but Notre Dame has got one loss at that point on the season. Well, that game's massive because that could be a season killer for Notre Dame, whereas, you know, if they win that game, they're still in the mix. And so, to me, it's just a better system overall. I think the only thing that we're missing is having those second-round games on campus as well, because you're asking so much of fans to try and potentially travel for four straight weeks, maybe five straight weeks if you're talking about a conference championship game before that. But more than that, it's just those games are going to be so great on campus. And it feels like you're penalizing the top four schools by giving them a bye. Obviously, it's less of a road. They have to play one less game to win a national championship, but they're going to miss out on those on-campus environments, which I think are going to be unlike anything we've ever seen in college football.
Well, let's talk about the Rebels. That's obviously going to be a team that I think all year long will be in that discussion to be in the college football playoff. We've watched the evolution of Jackson Dart. You know, came in, a lot of hype, had a solid first year at Ole Miss. You knew there was some room to improve. I thought he was really, really good a season ago. What's this year for Jackson Dart? Is there another step up for him? Can he become one of the nation's top two or three quarterbacks?
This is a year where, if you're talking about the draft, it's not a banner quarterback class. I mean, everybody's talking about Carson Beck for obvious reasons. But, you know, after that, you're talking about Jalen Milroe in the SEC and, you know, other guys in the SEC. So could he get into that league where he's, you said top two or three, certainly top five? I think so. To me, the trait that stands out to him more than anything else after having watched him for a couple of seasons is his toughness. And sometimes that's hard to measure. And sometimes toughness turns into bad decision-making where you take hits that aren't necessary. We saw that with Jaden Daniels a year ago at LSU. And yet he was still able to stay healthy enough that he won a Heisman Trophy and put up just incredible numbers. I think Jackson Dart can continue to grow in terms of accuracy. I think particularly accuracy with the deep ball, because he's got some pretty significant downfield weapons, of course, with the addition of Juice Wells, if he's healthy, and what Trey Harris brings to the table. So there are a lot of options in the passing game. When he's got those opportunities, he's got to cash in on them, and was good about that. I don't know that you're going to see like the eye-popping numbers that, for example, again, Jaden Daniels had last year because of the component of Ole Miss's running game. As long as they're able to run the football, they're going to be pretty balanced offensively. They're going to be in that 50-50 range, not because Lane Kiffin believes you have to be at 50% passing and 50% running to be successful, but it gives them kind of an element of surprise, and you're able to keep defenses off balance. And one of the things that at times has been missing in the running game in the years past is Ole Miss's ability to run the ball when they want to run the ball and the opponent knows you're going to run the ball. To me, that's the mark of a great rushing offense. Ole Miss did not have that 2 years ago. I thought they did more so a year ago. When they wanted to kind of take the air out of the ball in the fourth quarter, they were able to do that. So improved accuracy, probably some better decision-making in terms of the hits that he takes, and just continuing to be that tough player, I think that's the next step. I don't think it's some gigantic leap this year. I think it's just kind of an incremental step as he continues to grow and becomes more experienced.
You talked about the running game, and for all the talk of the players that came into Ole Miss via the transfer portal, the most headlines were on a guy who went out, and that's Quinshon Judkins. It makes me think of that scene in Moneyball, Richard, where they talk about Giambi and they say, we can't replace him, but we can replace him in the aggregate. Is that what Ole Miss has done with the transfer portal here? Have they replaced what Quinshon Judkins gave them in the aggregate?
I don't know. I mean, if you're an Ole Miss fan, you certainly hope that that's the case. We've talked about this on Sports Talk Mississippi a good bit. You know, with Quinshon Judkins, Ole Miss led the SEC in rushing the last couple of years. The year before that, they led the SEC in rushing without Quinshon Judkins. Are they going to lead the league in rushing this year? I don't know. I don't know if they will. I think they're going to be able to run the ball effectively. It became kind of a sexy thing to say as the season was going along a year ago that people really fell in love with Ulysses Bentley because of the type of runner that he is. You know, you would look at Judkins and he didn't have that same burst necessarily that Bentley had, but he was such a tough runner between the tackles. He hit the hole quickly and he could certainly rip off a 20, 30, 40 yard run. It was with Judkins, you didn't necessarily see him break the line of scrimmage at your own 25 and take it 75 yards to the house, but you don't have to do that to be a really good running back. And he is a really, really good running back. There's no way around saying that that is a loss in terms of production on the field. Will they be able to replicate it? I don't know. If you spread the carries around, you keep Ulysses Bentley healthy and kind of keep him upright, then I think he's got a chance to have a really good season. And then the hope is that some of the pieces that they've added through the portal will offset that loss. I like what you said, though, in the aggregate. That's good stuff.
Yeah. I know my stuff. I'm doing okay.
Makes you sound smart.
I got to do everything I can on that front.
I understand.
Is the key to the Ole Miss offense Caden Priestcorn? Is he the guy that takes this offense from good to great?
No. I think he's really, really important. I think Jackson Dart is that guy. Okay. I mean,
saying the quarterback is. Yeah. I mean, like from the skill position set standpoint.
I do think that a healthy Caden Priestcorn changes what you're able to do. And to me, the best Ole Miss example for that would be the 2020 season when Kenny Yeboah was in the mix for the first, seven or eight games. You know, he became less effective at the end of the year. He still hasn't blocked anybody. And then he opted out of the bowl game and maybe the last game of the regular season and the bowl game that he opted out of. But early in that year, he was such a mismatch that Ole Miss was able to do things offensively over the middle of the field that they weren't able to do for the next couple of years. Thought you saw that in the bowl game, not necessarily over the middle of the field. Priestcorn made a couple of unbelievable catches in the Peach Bowl against Penn State that were along the sideline. He's really athletic, especially for his size. He's kind of seen everything now as an older guy, transferred in, fifth-year senior. So I do think he gives you the opportunity to be more dynamic offensively because of the mismatch you create and because the defense can't ignore that position and just sell out to try and cover the guys on the outside. They've got to account for him, and maybe it loosens up the coverage with some other guys as well.
Defensively, a season ago, a big improvement for Ole Miss. Pete Golding comes in, and he turns that defense in the right direction. I wouldn't say they were a dominant defense. The word I like to use last year, they were very opportunistic. They forced turnovers. They forced negative plays. They got after the quarterback. But they weren't necessarily a defense that would just go out there and grind you down and get a bunch of three and outs. You could move the ball on Ole Miss. They just somehow found a way to take it away from you or put you in a third and 21, at some point in the drive. I guess my question is, with the guys they brought in from the portal this year, can they be more of a get-off-the-field quick defense this year, be a little bit more dominant?
I think so. And I think what you point to about creating turnovers was one of the big keys for them a year ago, whether that's in the passing game or forcing fumbles and being able to recover those fumbles. But when you think about the best defenses that we've seen in the SEC, and whether you want to say in recent years or over the last 30 or 40 years, there's a pretty common thread, and that's really good play on the defensive line. And this has a chance to be one of, if not the best defensive lines in Ole Miss history. Obviously, they add Walter Nolan, and that's a big piece, a guy that everybody wanted in the transfer portal. And Ole Miss made a pretty significant commitment that was the guy that they were targeting, and they went out and they were able to get that done. But you've got Jared Ivey and you've got J.J. Pegues and you got some other pieces. Who am I thinking about? Xavion Thomas. Is that right? Is it Xavion? Xavion Harris.
Yeah.
Sorry, wrong guy. So some pieces there on the interior of that defensive line that give you a chance to one, go get the quarterback, but two, have depth. I mean, it's not just three guys that you're relying on that you think are really good, but they're exhausted by the time the fourth quarter gets around. They got to do it, though, right? I mean, it's one thing to talk about the depth you've got, but then you've got to go out and you got to play. Ole Miss's schedule, I think, is pretty favorable, but you got to go out and do that on a week-in, week-out basis. And then the cliches, right? I mean, you got to have good team chemistry and a locker room that gets along and guys that really buy in, and they're all kind of playing for the same thing and really pushing, not pushing the rope, but pulling the rope in the same direction. We'll see how many more cliches I can roll into that. But that stuff does matter. I mean, and we kind of roll our eyes about it sometimes, But one of the things that, Ole Miss had a year ago was everybody being completely bought in. And I think that team even a year ago knew that it was a year away from, you know, they had the big stage against Georgia and they just weren't good enough. And Lane Kiffin was very honest after that ball game when he's like, we don't look like them. We got to figure out a way to get a roster that looks like them. Well, they've got a roster that is a whole lot closer, especially on the defensive side, to looking like Georgia than at any point in recent history. And now you just got to go do it.
Jeff Lebby and Lane Kiffin, you know, friends, but got to be enemies. You know, kind of like you and I in some ways. Does their knowledge of each other cancel each other out? Does anybody have an advantage there because they know the other's tendencies?
No, I think players cancel each other out or maybe eliminate the canceling out. I mean, ultimately, it's about who's got the best players and then whether or not those players play well when they're supposed to. I mean, you're talking specifically about the Egg Bowl. I mean, yeah, Jeff knows what Lane's going to do, and Coleman Hutzler kind of knows what they're going to do. But Ole Miss does not run the most complicated offense in the country. I mean, it's not like they're just scheming you to death. They tend to scheme to guys that they believe can make plays in certain matchups. And they're not afraid to, if they find a mismatch, not just exploit it once, but go to it over and over and over again. I mean, I used the Caden Priestcorn example from the Peach Bowl earlier, kind of talking about the athletic person he is. Ole Miss found a mismatch against that Penn State secondary with Caden Priestcorn, and they went to the well multiple times. And so to me, yeah, you may know a guy's tendencies, but ultimately if they're scheming, let's just say that Ole Miss thinks that it's got an advantage one-on-one on the outside with Trey Harris against whoever the corner is that's covering him. Well, how do you scheme to get the ball to Trey Harris? Well, you got to throw it to him, but maybe you've got to do things with other receivers that causes Mississippi State not to be able to double cover Trey Harris. And that's what I think they've been really, really good at. I've said before, I think Lane Kiffin is one of the best play callers in America, but the truth of the matter is I think he does as good a job of identifying mismatches and then exploiting those. And I think that's the thing that has led to the success. And I think that probably means more in a game like this than, you know, Lane Kiffin knows Lebby, Lebby knows Kiffin, Coleman Hutzler knows, you know, whatever. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Very good. Very good. Last question. How do teams beat Ole Miss this year?
You know, that they overwhelm them at the line of scrimmage. You know, when you think about the two games that Ole Miss lost last year, they lost to Alabama, they lost to Georgia. Both of those teams were physically better. Now, Alabama, if you go back to that game, they were good enough defensively in the secondary that they were able to hang with wide receivers, but more than anything, they put pressure on Jackson Dart. And they did that by just being better up front than Ole Miss was on the offensive line. And then Georgia was the same thing. I mean, it felt like Ole Miss had time to do absolutely nothing in that ballgame. So Ole Miss has got to have this offensive line that they've retooled through the portal. I mean, you've got guys that are back this year that were starters a year ago that are going to be backups this year when you had a couple of offensive linemen from Washington. And so when Ole Miss meets a team that is physically equal or better, and how many times is that going to happen? I mean, it's going to happen when they face Georgia. I think Oklahoma is going to have a better defense than people are giving it credit for going into this season. You know, we'll see with LSU. But outside of those three in particular, who's going to be physically better than this Ole Miss team is? I don't really think anybody is. And so when they get matchups like that, can they handle it, right? Can they handle them up front? And then can they create pressure? I mean, you think about Jalen Milroe. He was patient early in that game, and then he kind of exploded because Ole Miss couldn't get any pressure on him during that ball game. So I don't know if that's the only way to look at it. I understand the question that you're asking, but that's kind of the thing, right? I mean, with what Ole Miss has done with this roster during the offseason, they have built a team that physically should be able to compete with just about anybody in the country. And so if you're going to beat them, one, I mean, obviously Ole Miss can't make mistakes, right? I mean, you can't have a day where Jackson Dart throws four interceptions. Yeah. No, I understand. But if you're just going to – if Ole Miss is going to play well and you're going to beat them, then you're going to have to be physically better than they are. And there aren't a lot of teams, I don't think, that fall into that category right now.
Especially on the Ole Miss schedule. I mean, the ones that you would play there, Ole Miss is missing them this year. It seems like Texas, maybe Alabama. They do have Georgia. LSU is LSU. We'll see. But should be a very interesting. Going to be a high-stakes egg bowl because I feel like it's going to be a situation, as I sit here today, Ole Miss will come in at maybe 9-2 and say, okay, if we win this game, we're going to the playoff. But if they don't, then there could be an issue there. And we'll have to see, you know.
Fingers I feel crossed. Like we have I feel like we've seen that scenario in the Egg Bowl before. And for the team that was favored, it didn't go particularly well.
It did not. It did not. You know, the 2014 situation. But I'll be honest with you, Richard, one thing I've thought a lot about over the past few months since Levy was brought in is 2009 and Mullen's first year and Ole Miss coming to Starkville, needing to win to go to the Citrus Bowl, having all the momentum, State sort of just sitting there at 4-7, and then State put on a performance that day and won that game and sort of turned the tide in this rivalry for a few years anyway. And, you know, could Levy do the same to Kiffin in this year where Ole Miss – remember that year Ole Miss was preseason top 10 as well. They were on the cover of Sports Illustrated. We all remember that. And – you know, that we all know what happened. So I don't know if that can be the case this year. I think this Ole Miss team is better than that 2009 Ole Miss team was. But we'll see.
I agree.
We'll see. Yeah. It's always fun to talk about it, though.
That 2009 season was weird, right? I mean, it finished with a Cotton Bowl win over Oklahoma State, yeah, I think.
That's correct.
But you had the disappointment of losing on that Thursday night in Columbia, South Carolina. I think the Rebels were fourth in the country.
Where Ole Miss goes this year. Want to point out the similarity. Yeah.
They do. I think this is a different South Carolina team, but that's not an easy place to play, and it looks like that could be a night game. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun. And going back to where we started, really excited about this season for both reasons.
Oh, I mean, I'm just excited. It's college football, baby. We're always excited.
Absolutely.
So Richard Cross, you know where to find him. I don't need to tell you that. We'll talk to him again. So I'll be talking to him again in about an hour and 8 minutes. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, pal.
Robbie, a top 10 ranked Ole Miss team, a new head coach at Mississippi State. They do have to play at South Carolina this year. Robbie, the coincidences are there. What are we going to see at the end of the season when Mississippi State travels to Oxford for the Egg Bowl? I think you're going to see an Ole Miss team that's going to be under some pressure because they probably are going to be in a situation where a loss to Mississippi State could knock them out of the playoff. And so the pressure would be on Ole Miss, for sure. I feel like State could go up there. State might go in there needing a win for bowl eligibility. But the pressure of bowl eligibility is nothing compared to the pressure of the playoff. This year, and this is what I keep coming back to, just in my own thought process. If you said make a prediction today, I would predict Ole Miss to win. I'd probably predict them to win by 10 to 14 points. But last year, against the worst Mississippi State team in a decade, the best Ole Miss team in a decade won by 10. And they only led by 3 going into the fourth quarter. And if State had any ghost of an offense, they would have won the game. And so it becomes a question, with a better coach team, with a coach who I think is definitely motivated to win the game, can State go into Oxford and pull off that upset this year? It was an upset 2 years ago in Oxford, but not nearly as big as it would be this year. What do you think? What are your early June thoughts about the Egg Bowl?
I mean, early thoughts are I could easily see this being a good game that has like Mississippi State playing with nothing to lose, Ole Miss playing with a tight, you know what?
No, Robbie, what is a new you know what?
Anyways, so I think that this could be a game that would be sneaky. It could be sneaky. I'm taking Ole Miss right now, and just like you said, probably 2 touchdowns, 14, 17 points seems right for this moment. But as we know, like, you really can, more often than not, throw the records out the window, and maybe not in the sense of, you know, you don't know who's going to win the game, but it being a closer game for a team that's not expected to be in the ball game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still think Ole Miss wins this game, but I think it can easily be, you know, a touchdown ball game in the final possession or something like that. We've seen that too many times between these two teams where one team is expected to roll the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of where I stand right now. I like Ole Miss in it because I just think it's a program that is already established at this point. They know what they are in Lane Kiffin. They've loaded up their defense with talent that they haven't had probably since 14, 15.
Yeah.
Defensively, from a pure talent standpoint,
yeah,
it's hard for me to imagine coaches that are as solid as Lane Kiffin and as solid as Pete Golding, because no matter what you think about Pete Golding, I do think he's a really good coach, and it's hard for me to believe that Nick Saban would keep him around as long as he did if he couldn't coach.
Right.
So I think that the coaching is going to be sound for them, and I think they're going to be a really good team. My thought is, from a locker room standpoint, from a logistics standpoint, with what they have on the roster, how is everyone going to mesh?
Mm-hmm.
It could be a team that competes for a national championship. It could be a team that's competing for the SEC this year. Mm-hmm. Or it can be a tale of, like, a cautionary tale of not going all in on the portal and not loading up on all these guys that consider themselves superstars or starters at Power Five schools.
Mm-hmm.
We will find out. This will be one of the ultimate examples of the transfer portal working in your favor or not working in your favor, like going all in on it like Lane Kiffin has. That's what I'm interested to see as the year unfolds for Ole Miss, is how does this team come together? Is everybody pulling in the same direction? Is everybody on the same page? Or do we see a little bit of a crack with this roster? I'm going to be watching that all season with this team. You know, so far, I don't know if there's any issues there. It seems to be, you know, everybody's pretty locked in. So, you know, we'll see how that transpires. But that is going to be the biggest thing for me, because from a pure talent standpoint and program standpoint at this point, there's no question that Ole Miss is a pretty far way ahead of Mississippi State right now. So I don't think going head to head, if Ole Miss is locked in and Mississippi State's locked in, that State has, you know, a great chance of winning that ball game. But if you do have some animosity in the clubhouse, or, you know, they have a letdown during the season and they're, you know, the playoff is a little bit out of their periphery, or there's a lot of pressure on them, that's where I think State can attack this year. And that's, I think, what happened in 2009.
Yeah.
I think Ole Miss, they got to, I think, fourth or fifth in the country. They lost at South Carolina. They lost another game or two. And it was a team that at that point, they were not as motivated, I don't think, as they were in the middle of the season. And State was very motivated to win that game. Mm-hmm. That's where I think State can strike this year.
One thing, yeah, if you're picking Mississippi State to beat Ole Miss today, on June 12th, June 13th, right? You're doing it because you're a Mississippi State fan. And I get that. That's fine. I'm not going to chide you for that. But there's, you know, if you look at this game today, Ole Miss should be favored to win this game. They are, as Robbie said, they are the more talented football team top to bottom. They have the consistency. They have the continuity that Mississippi State does not have. State is in a state of flux right now. New coaches, new coordinators, new systems. Ole Miss, everything is the same as it was a season ago. You bring back your 2-year starting quarterback. You bring back a ton of talent at the skill positions. This is going to be a very tough matchup when State gets to Oxford. You know, what you hope is that State is in a position that where they have something to play for, be it, you know, bowl game, maybe improving their bowl status. You know, they come in 6-5. You could be looking at it and say, hey, if you're 7-5, you got a chance to go to the Belk Bowl, or I'm sorry, the Belk Bowl, the Duke's Mayo Bowl, or the Music City Bowl. You might be able to get to one of the, you know, go up a tier a little bit. So We'll see. The Rebels are going to be a good team this year. If you're a State fan, I've been saying this for the past few weeks, you cannot let what Ole Miss is going to do this year affect your college football season. Just enjoy your season. Worry about Ole Miss when you get to the last week of the season, because the Rebels are going to be good this year. And if they aren't, we'll all point and laugh at them. It's no big deal. We'll all have a good laugh. But if they are, then it just is what it is. Mississippi State's time will come. If there's anything we know about this rivalry, is that it's going to circle. It will circle back around at some point, and it'll be State on top and Ole Miss looking up. It just will be. It always is.
Yeah, that was kind of my point. Whenever I've gotten to the massive argument that I did with the Ole Miss fans the other day, is it's not about where the two programs are right now. That's not my point. My point is the overarching comment by Barrett Salee that Ole Miss is big brother and Mississippi State's little brother, I think is quite disingenuous when you look at the history of this rivalry.
Yeah.
And if you're just speaking as someone that's viewing it on the outside looking in, and that's your optics of it, that's one thing. But for those of us that are in the rivalry and we've watched this our entire lives, this has been a back and forth rivalry since it moved to campuses.
Mm-hmm.
And even a little bit before that, the rivalry is separated the way that it is right now because of the time period Johnny Vaught was here.
Correct.
Before integration.
Right.
The 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever that time period when they won 17 in a row or whatever that was, that is the separation in the series. Since integration, since the rivalry moved to campuses, this thing is almost dead even. And if you look at the trajectory of it, you look at, Billy Brewer had a nice run. Then it was Jackie Sherrill. Then it was kind of – and neither team really had a stronghold on it until Dan Mullen won three in a row. Mm-hmm. And then it looked like Hugh Freeze was kind of taking over a little bit. That's just been the nature of it. Yeah. There's been ups and downs and ebbs and flows in this rivalry. And I believe that's going to happen again here at some point. Ole Miss at some point will lose Lane Kiffin, and they'll have a big hit to their roster at some point. When that time comes and the roster is mostly transfer portal players and you haven't had a ton of guys underneath that are developing and guys are transferring out, you're going to have a time where it doesn't hit for you. That's the nature of it. You're rolling the dice here in the transfer portal. I believe at some point Ole Miss's roster is going to feel the effects of that. It's going to be hard to turn right back around, and State might take over for a few years. I think that's kind of how this rivalry plays out. At least that's what history says.
I mean, Robbie, Ole Miss fans this year are saying things like, oh, we're about to bury you. We're about to leave you behind. Well, and I've said this before, I heard that in 1990. And then I heard it again in 2003. And then I heard it again in 2013. Yeah. And then I heard it again in 2016. And then I'm hearing it now. And it's like, eventually, I figured it out. When are you? I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't answer that. So, all right.
It's obvious, where our allegiances lie at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that either of us can hide that at this point, but it doesn't affect you and I being able to use our brains and talk about things objectively when it comes to this rivalry. You and I have both talked about where Mississippi State and Ole Miss are at this point. We've both praised Ole Miss. We've both praised Lane Kiffin. We know where things are headed this year for Ole Miss. But I don't understand why people can't look at this rivalry and look at the trends that we've seen over the years and not be able to agree with what we're saying here. But we're the ones that get called homers and fanboys and stuff like that. It's just that's how this has played out, and it will play out again.
Yeah. I 100% agree with you and believe that. So let's move into the rest of the show. That's brought to you by our friends over at the Mississippi Beef Council, who want to remind you that beef, it is what's for dinner. If you're cooking out this weekend, nothing beats the sizzle of beef on the grill. you're looking for recipes, they're at msbeef.org, along with a lot of other great ideas for cooking, and along for a lot of great information about the beef providers here in our state. It's Father's Day weekend, all right? Cook Dad a steak. I promise that's what he wants. Take Dad out for a steak. Do something. Enjoy it with a trip. Enjoy it with a trip to the grocery store. Pick up some delicious steaks this weekend. Beef, it's what's for dinner. Thank you to our friends at the Mississippi Beef Council. What am I doing here? I lost track of everything right there. Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District is the place to find the smoked Southern soul food that you are looking for. And if you are looking for it, let's just not for 1 second of our lives think that that's not the case. It's great stuff. It's the best food. It's fantastic. Everybody loves it. I've never, not one time can I remember somebody being like, I didn't have a great experience at Two Brothers. And speaking of great places to check out, if you haven't already, check out the Older Brother right next door to Two Brothers in the heart of the Cotton District. Fancy sandwiches, man. I don't know. I never thought fancy sandwiches could be a thing, but they've made it that at the Older Brother. Great sandwiches, the best fries I can ever remember having. And I need to check out some of their desserts. When we were there, Robbie, do you like lemon desserts?
I like a little lemon pound cake.
Okay. They had like this lemon, I don't know how to describe it. It was like, you know what a lemon square is, right?
Yes.
But it had that with like a lemon ice cream over the top of it. I'm not a big lemon guy, but it was really, really good. But when I talked to Bart, he said, we're going to have a lot more desserts coming in. We'll have some chocolate stuff. So it's going to be a great place. It's just starting to grow into itself. If you haven't checked out the Older Brother, do that. And if you haven't checked out Two Brothers, well, what the hell are you waiting on? Head over to Two Brothers for some smoked Southern soul food. Great products, great service. That's the thing that everybody is looking for when they buy anything. If you need technology for your business and you want to deal with somebody who really deals in great products and great service, you need to do it at Advantage Business Systems. Because if you haven't already, you're missing out. It's simple as that. You need to go with a place that year in and year out delivers for its customers. That's what Advantage Business Systems does. Copiers, printers, computers, laptops, mailing and information systems, everything's right there at your fingertips with Advantage Business Systems. But most importantly, service after the sale. Give them a call today at 601-362-9192 or visit them online, absms.com. Find out how Advantage Business Systems will help your business do business. Before you go to the game this fall, you need to be at Maroon & Co. Simple as this, guys. You need new gear. You don't want to go into the season with the stink of Arnett. You got to get rid of that. So we're going to head over to Maroon & Co., and we're going to get some new polos, some new hats, some new T-shirts, and we're going to wear those to the game. And we're going to get the fragrance, Le Eau de Lebe, will be on us. And everybody like, what is that? It's going to be like arrogance back in the day with Rick Bartel. We're just going to be spraying it on people. So head to Maroon & Co. and enjoy a fantastic time looking at shirts that you cannot find anywhere else. Get a new shirt. Get a new hat. Get something for the tailgate. Get something for the car. Let everybody know you're a Bulldog with a trip to Maroon & Co. Before you go to the games, you need to go to Maroon & Co. A little more college football talk. I caught up earlier this week with John Talty. Now a national college. He's just risen up the ranks. Yeah, he's just grown so much. Remember when he was covering recruiting and we all hated him?
Yeah, I remember one time whenever I was a student at Mississippi State and I called him Beetlejuice.
I wish I had known that prior.
And then later, like when I got into media relations and media, I grew to like the guy.
Yeah, exactly.
He was a typical – he had that typical – it was like the Zach Arnett stench.
Mm-hmm.
He had that stench on him. He had the Clarion Ledger stench.
Yeah, but he's shaking it off now. And now yes. Has moved himself up. I'll get it right eventually. To a national college football reporter for 24/7 Sports. Got his thoughts on a few college football topics and, of course, talked a little Mississippi State with John Talty. Let's go to that interview right now. We have had John Talty on this podcast to talk about recruiting. We've had him on this podcast to talk about Alabama. We've had him on to talk about life and love and all the beautiful things there are in this great world of ours. But today, John Talty, national college football reporter for 24/7 Sports, is going to talk about exactly that. Congrats on the promotion there, my friend.
Thank you. We've come a long way from you hating me when I first arrived in Mississippi to where we are now. It's been a beautiful journey.
You know, it just shows the circle of life that you know, an enemy can become a friend. And in some cases, a friend can become an enemy. That hasn't happened for me too much, but, you know, we'll just go with it. So always glad to talk to you, John. Good to see you. Let's start off big picture stuff around the nation. And we'll start in the SEC. You know, who's the best player in the SEC? That's a really that can be a subjective debate, and so can this. But who is the most valuable player in the SEC? Who's the player that if he went away, that team has no chance with?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think you have to go to you have to get. I think you have to give it to a quarterback just based on the importance, you know, of the position. So I think if you look at, we're thinking biggest potential impact, right? I think you look at Quinn Ewers at Texas, Jackson Dart at Ole Miss, Jalen Milroe at Alabama. These guys who, you know, are the starters for programs that we think have a real shot to make the college football playoff. That's probably where I would start. Now, I'm not saying that those are the three best players in the SEC, but I think, you know, you take those guys away. I mean, I'll go back a year from now, you know, Alabama and just what they needed out of Jalen Milroe in some of these moments where I don't think Jalen Milroe is the greatest quarterback of all time, but their offensive line wasn't very good for big stretches, and his ability to kind of make plays happen off cuff, I think, was so important to them last year and a big reason why they made the playoffs. So that's kind of those kind of three probably where I would start.
Let's switch it over and talk about the Big 12 for a second. I think that's an exciting conference. You know, now that the big dogs in Texas and Oklahoma have moved out, it feels like it's wide open. I like the new additions. What stands out to you storyline-wise in the Big 12?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're hitting on it right there. I mean, I think certainly the first year without Texas and Oklahoma, two teams that, you know, have been the big dogs for a long time. And then especially last year, you know, after all the years of, is Texas back? They were finally back last year, and now, of course, they're gone. So I think there's a real opportunity for different, you know, programs to emerge. You know, if we think about this through the prism of the college football playoff, you know, one of these teams is going to be in it, right? So, you know, like, I am very curious to see what happens at Arizona. I think they were, to me, in many ways, like the story of last year. I love what Jed Fish did there. They've got some really good returning talent. Noah Fita and T-Mac, their wide receiver. I like that pairing a lot. We'll see what, you know, their first year head coach can do. Of course, you've got the Deion show, and that's, you know, dominates so much of the airwaves and sucks up so much oxygen. But that's a fascinating story, you know, from the high of they won a couple games to the low and all the offseason drama. So I think that the Big 12, it doesn't have maybe that premier program that we can expect to be dominating or be at the top. But I think from an individual star power, there's a lot in the Big 12. And I love what Brett Yormark is doing just in terms of trying to lean into being a fun, innovative conference.
You didn't mention the team I like the most there, and that's Utah. I think that I would pick them to win that conference today. Cam Rising, and I think his 15th year now at Utah, really working on that second doctorate. He's a fantastic player. So I like Utah.
I add one thing. I think one of my favorite moments last year was when Kyle Whittingham showed up to the Pat McAfee show. It might have even been game day, one of them in a motorcycle. Like, Kyle Whittingham to me is like ideal dad strength. That guy is absolutely jacked. Every time I see him, I'm like, oh my God, this guy could break me in half. But he's like the best coach that nobody really talks about. So I love that pick.
Yeah. Let's go to the ACC for a second. And it's fun to watch this from an outside perspective, but Clemson has set themselves up as this program that they're not going to use the portal. They are completely against it to the point of parody almost at this point. We all saw the funny video that went around last week of the Jeopardy thing with Dabo. I don't know that that's going to work. I don't think it's going to work. If it doesn't work, what is Clemson going to look like this year and then beyond?
Well, I've been down on Clemson for years now, and you can go back.
Because you're an Alabama homer.
No, I think you – so, yeah. Actually, I'll give you the answer. I think I am in some ways that I feel like, you know, and you can see it, you know, I've been a Nick, you know, wrote a Nick Saban book, and I thought one of his great strengths was his ability to adapt and evolve. And
agreed.
Knowing that, comparing it to Dabo, I don't see that, and I haven't seen it for a while. Now, I do think I was pleasantly surprised when he shook up the staff and brought in Garrett Riley. That was a move that surprised me a little bit because he had been really entrenched on, we're kind of rolling with our guys, even though it wasn't working. But the transfer portal thing is just him being stubborn, I think, for the sake of being stubborn. Now, they went after a couple guys in the portal half-heartedly and didn't get any of them. To me, if I were making a prediction, I don't think it goes super well this year. I don't think it's a disaster, but I don't think they meet expectations. I don't think they make the playoff. And I think you start having an interesting conversation. Like, he's not a guy that's going to get fired or anything like that. But certain point, you're like, we're paying this guy top of market. He's won a couple of national championships, but like, are we ever going to get back to that place if he's unwilling to evolve? And that, I think, is going to be a dominant storyline for that program this year.
Let's go back to the SEC for just a minute. Who's the team in this conference that has the biggest gap between ceiling and floor?
I think, to me, Ole Miss might be the most boom or bust. I just think that you could talk me into a lot of different outcomes. And here's what I think is interesting about Ole Miss is that it's well established. They went all in this year. They've loaded up on talent. And we've seen that. We've seen this in pro sports where teams feel like this is our year to make a run. Let's add in this talent. And sometimes it really works and sometimes it doesn't. And there are guys who are coming in to chase a ring. You know, I was talking to somebody recently reminiscing about the Lakers when they brought in Karl Malone and Gary Payton. And I can remember the Steve Nash, Dwight Howard ones. Like, sometimes it just doesn't
work. Oh, I remember too.
I know. And the culture starts to erode a little bit. And so to me, Ole Miss is fascinating where, like, it feels like, again, I think they're going to be a popular pick to make the playoff. They have the talent to make the playoff. That there's a lot of reasons to be very excited about them. And I'm a believer. But it's just one of those things where you wonder if it starts to get a little off the rails, having all these guys who've come in kind of as mercenaries, how does that culture look? How does Lane Kiffin keep all that together? That, to me, is why I think that's a team that could be playing the national championship game, and I think they could lose, you know, four games or something like that, and everybody's wondering what happened here.
You really have come full circle, John. I'm so proud of you. So I've been saying the same thing about Ole Miss for the past couple of weeks, is that if it was NC or if it was EA college football and I could turn off injuries, Ole Miss would be really, really dangerous. But depth is still an issue for that team. And you know, you saw that last year when they played Georgia. They just didn't have the hosses, and I just don't know if they have them again this year. But I do think their schedule lends themselves to a good season. All right, let's turn the page to Mississippi State here. Jeff Lebby, everywhere he's been offensive coordinator, it's been a pretty quick turnaround. Oklahoma, you wouldn't say turnaround because they were good offensively when he got there, but Ole Miss was really bad, and then he got there, and they were one of the best offenses in the country. Central Florida, he really elevated that offense as well. Is it fair in year one, transfers all over the place, not really a history of being an explosive offense? I don't know if that plays into it or not. Is it fair in year one to say Jeff Lebby can come in here and make this offense a top 25 offense nationally?
I mean, the quantification there, I think, is tough. I mean, I think at minimum it'll be better than last year, right? Now, that's not a super high bar to achieve, but
buddy, you and I could call the plays and it'd be better than last year.
I'm just telling you, I think it'll be better than last year. Top 25, I'd have to think about that one a little bit more to see kind of where things are coming back. That feels a little lofty to me, but I mean, clearly the guy understands offense. I do think there's some pieces coming back that were, you know, maybe not fully utilized the way that they could have been last year. And, you know, I think that, as you mentioned, there's a terrific track record there where, you know, you just trust a guy like that, that he's going to be able to make some tweaks, be able to elevate it beyond what it's been, and, you know, get it back to, you know, I mean, you would know the stats better than I do. Like, what did Leach or Mullen max out at offensive wise?
I mean, Leach is not very high. He's going to be in the maybe 50s or 60s. Mullen, I think, got crept into the top 30 once, maybe like Dak's junior year when they went up to number one. The thing I look at, and this is the comparison I've made a bunch of times, probably to the point where people are sick of me doing it, is what Ole Miss was 2019 to 2020, playing a nothing but Power Five schedule that year because of COVID. They were the number, I think, three scoring offense in the country, and they were in the top 10 in total offense. And that's with no transfer portal. They just sort of, now he got there and he had Matt Corral, and I don't think we knew what Matt Corral was going to be. We didn't know that Elijah Moore was going to have the season he had, but he didn't have a whole ton of pieces, and he and Kiffin turned that offense around very, very quickly. I don't know if it can be as that good in year one for State, but I think it can be good.
That team gave Alabama absolute fits that year.
Yeah.
I mean, they were tough. And I think what's tough, I think sometimes with Webby in that period is just how much of it is him and how much of it is Lane, right? You know, I think Lane got a lot of credit for it. So I don't know. I think that I could see some people, the counter argument to that is like, that was all Lane, that wasn't as much Jeff. But certainly we've seen the success that Jeff has had since then that I think, you know, is like the counter argument to the counter argument. But I think that there should be certainly an elevation. And again, just talking to people around Mississippi State, like people are excited. People are really happy with Jeff. I think they're excited about what's to come. It's obviously, it's a tough league. Everybody knows that. But I think there's a feeling like they should be, you know, should have a real shot at a bowl game.
I've told this story a couple of times here on this show about the day Mississippi State hired Coleman Hutzler. I texted you because you covered Alabama at the time. And I was like, hey, tell me a little bit about Coleman Hutzler. And your response was, don't know much. And you know, my response when he was hired was, who? I had never heard of the guy. We're a few months into this now. Obviously, he hasn't coached his first game yet. I guess my question is going to be, you know enough about Saban assistants and how they work and what happens to them after they get out from under the learning tree there. What's the base expectation you have for a player, for a coach of Coleman Hutzler's resume here at Mississippi State?
Yeah, well, what's funny is I finally got to talk to him in person. I think it was at the Rose Bowl. And I came away like, this guy's a great guy. Like, I really enjoyed my conversation, you know, with him, and it finally got to see a little bit of his personality. So that was the first time we got to talk to him as a coach at Alabama. But, you know, in order to survive the Saban lifestyle, you know, he has to be very hardworking. He's going to be very organized. He's going to be diligent. Those guys, you don't survive in that world unless you have those things. So I would imagine, you know, his ability to take what he's learned from Saban and also what he's had at other places. You know, he's been at Ole Miss, he's been at different places, that you kind of mesh some of that together. But, you know, I think some of it, it's still an unknown. You know, I think he came in, you know, more, I think, known for special teams and things like that. And so to see him as a defensive coordinator, I think I'm curious to see how much does he take from Saban, which of course was, you know, has been one of the most successful defenses in college football history. And we've seen it used successfully at Georgia and other places. You know, you might know a little bit better about kind of how things are going to look in that regard, but that to me is, I think there's a lot to be excited about just in terms of what he's been around and how he can maybe deploy some of that at Mississippi State.
John just chuckled there because I was making the, it's going to be dicey face. all right, before you get out of here, new book coming out, right?
It is.
Tell me about it.
It's called The Price, comes out August 27th, right before college football season. So you're going to be fired up. You're going to be want to get all the college football you can get. You can buy it on Amazon and all Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, all your favorite places. Basically, we picked a couple, more than a couple, coaches, programs, things that we thought were interesting, and essentially followed them for a year. And so we did Jim Harbaugh, Nick Saban, Arizona, Mike Locksley at Maryland.
There's the Homer pick.
No, but it Maryland's, I think Maryland's interesting. And I think maybe Mississippi State fans can see some of themselves within Maryland in that, like, their aspirations for more, but you know, you're never going to have the most money, and you're in a league in which a lot of people have, you know, more history and more money than you. So how do you level up? And I think that's like, that to me, it's like that program that's like in the middle. One of my favorite movies is Almost Famous. It's like how they describe like the Stillwater piece. It's like that mid band that's striving for more. And like, can they make the leap? I think that's kind of, you know, Maryland and Arizona, those are schools that are kind of in that middle of the pack. How do you level up in the world of NIL and transfer portal? And that's what a lot of the book's about, is like how all these people and programs are trying to survive in this kind of chaotic world that we're in right now.
Sounds interesting. I really enjoyed your first book, The Leadership Secrets of Nick Saban. Read it a couple of times, and I'm definitely looking forward to checking out. I will get my autographed copy, though, correct?
Of course. We'll make it happen for you.
Thank you, sir. John Talty, 24/7 Sports. Appreciate your time, man. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate you having me.
All right, thanks to John. We appreciate him. We are here. Today is the day. If you are in the Starkville area, please join us at Obie's. 11 a.m., we will be there for the start of the Thunder and Lightning Summer Catfish Tour presented by Superior Catfish. Great catfish. We're going to have some great interviews with Coach Chris Jans, with Charlie Winfield from the Bulldog Initiative. Plus, it's me and Robbie, so you know we'll have a good time. And I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward not only to a great time, Robbie, I'm looking forward to some catfish. I'm hungry.
And as you know, there are two places in Starkville that – three, if you count Restaurant Tyler, but there's two places that you and I both love to eat catfish. And that's most – we love to eat catfish a lot of places, but especially love to eat catfish at Little Dewey and Obie's. You know why? Because they serve superior catfish.
That's right. Simple as that. So come join us if you're in the Starkville area. We want to see you. That's 11 a.m. at Obie's. We'll be there. For Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.